What is up, Atlanta? It's a Thursday with Turtle. That's right. O's already got him up. I'm with you for the full two. And yes, it will be the full two, not the full like three and change that it wound up being last night. Because Corky Kell got off to a roaring start.
A literally, wet start,
yeah,
yes.
Literally as thunder and lightning came down on the field. And do you know what time they wound up finishing last night, O?
So, Day-Day, I asked him today. He said he got home last night after 1 o'clock. So, they wrapped up after midnight. Good.
Wow. That is crazy. Well, today, it is all sunshine and unicorns and rainbows and butterflies outside. And should be getting ready to go right around 8 o'clock should be the kickoff tonight. Excited to bring you more Corky Kell action right here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game. You know, Oren, I felt like such a media guy today. You know, there are some days where, you know, you do this job and, you know, you feel like you're getting tugged in a million different directions. And today was one of those days for me. It felt good. I taped an interview with our good buddy Sigmund Bloom, which you'll hear in 15 minutes. He was nice enough to join me. I said, you know what I said? Oh, I said, I got my fantasy draft coming up in like a week. I don't know what the heck I'm going to do. It's a snake draft, and I'm picking like right in the middle. So it's like the worst of both circumstances. I don't get any of those back-to-back because I finished second in the league last year, so they just screwed me. They put me right in the middle of the snake draft. And I was like, let me get ready. So I tapped in with a couple of my buddies, and I said, you know what? Come on the show tonight. I want to see what both of you have to say, and I want to see where you guys differ or where you guys agree. For instance, I'll tell you, Sigmund, very high on Bijan Robinson. How high? You'll find out in about 15 minutes. Very high on Drake London. You'll find out how high in about 15 minutes. And I also asked him, oh, would he dare take a hope upon hope upon hope?
Don't say it.
Flyer.
Don't say it.
On a guy that if it all works out.
In a contract year.
In a contract year.
Who's healthy for the first time in a couple years.
Could be a top five leader.
At his
in
position.
In his category of
been
tight end.
Been smiling all preseason camp.
Would he dare?
Had a one-handed touchdown catch yesterday.
Yes, he did. Touch Kyle Pitts. You'll find out all those questions and more coming up in
15
minutes.
I'm in a quandary
minutes.
Myself with fantasy football, Chris.
Yeah. How many leagues are you in?
I'm in two.
Okay.
But we've already done the draft order for one. And the first two picks that went, you get to pick your – because we did a contest to see what pick you picked. So the guys who got first and second, they picked – respectively, they picked 12 – oh, no, 5 and 12.
I'm sorry, what?
They picked the – they wanted the fifth pick and they wanted the 12th pick.
Because of some strategy for later rounds?
I have no idea.
Because off the rip, that sounds really dumb.
So I was like, I had a third pick, and I'm like,
all right.
I guess I'll take the first overall pick, but it's been sitting now on me. I've been going back and forth about Jamar and Bijan. I don't know which way to go. I thought when I started this thing, I had one clear direction.
Oof.
Now I'm blurred by it.
Well, I will say this. One team lost its offensive coordinator.
They did.
One team's offensive coordinator got better when the starter that is now starting all 17 games was put in.
That happened.
Offensive line, maybe slight edge to Detroit. Yeah, that's tough. I think I'd take our guy, though. I think his usage, Oren. I think people are getting – here's something, and I'll say this. I think everybody needs to just slow down a little bit on the prolification of Michael Penix Jr. The prolificness of Michael Penix Jr. Because – I think we all need to remember something. This offense is predicated on getting 7 and 25 the ball. That's their bread and butter. It's going forwards, not going backwards. So I know a lot of us are hot to trot on Michael Penix Jr., and you absolutely should be. Oren, get it ready. Him and Drake London have been special this season as they continue to work 9 to 5. And we know how special that connection can be. Working 9 to 5. Sing it, Dolly. Come on now. On a Thursday. But, I still think for this team to have the overwhelming majority of success they want to have, Michael Penix Jr. is going to be handing that thing off a lot. If he throws more than, 32, 33 times a game, I don't think that's going to be the game plan. At least a couple of those are going to be dump offs to Bijan Robinson. So, again, I'm all about it. I'm all on the hype train. But I think we need to recognize, just for a second, to Oren's point of taking Bijan number one overall in your fantasy league, he's going to get a lot of touches. Now, I hope he doesn't get 400 touches and you burn him out, but he's going to probably be close to the league lead, I would think. And that's by design. This team is not a team that's going to throw to set up the run. It's the opposite. They're going to run to set up the play action pass. And now they have a quarterback who isn't broken and can actually roll out and make a play with his arm or with his legs. So I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're thinking Michael Penix, speaking of, if you're thinking Michael Penix Jr. is going to be your fantasy quarterback this year, I think he's going to have a very good season, but I don't want him throwing for 40 touchdowns. That's not the game plan. If he throws for 40 touchdowns, that probably means you're behind in a lot more games than you'd want to be. So I'm high on him, and I think he's going to be great, but I think we're forgetting way too much about what the game plan is. The game plan is Bijan's getting the ball at least twice per four downs. Like, that's just what's going to happen. Or a combination of Tyler and Bijan. And if they're rolling, like, you know, Oren, there's like four games a year where Algier just gets going and you just feed him like six straight times and he gets 5 yards a pop. So that's going to happen again a couple of times. So I don't think Penix is going to have like a monster touchdown season. What was it though that you told me was a couple of weeks ago? 18 and a half. No, it's going to be a lot more than that, but I don't think it's going to be 38 and a half. I think it's going to be 24 to 27. And I think that would be a perfect number for him. Cause I think Bijan Robinson's going to have, you know, 14 total touchdowns this year too. And Algier will get 6 or 7. And hopefully Pitts gets, you know, 7 to 10 in a perfect world. So that's just really what we're looking at here. So, yes, we're excited about fantasy, and yes, we're all getting hyped about all the throws in practice and everything that we're seeing, and we absolutely should. But I think we also just need to remember what the game plan is on most Sundays. That is, you are featuring number 7 as the main pinpoint of your offense and your offensive scheme. And you should, because he's, you know, a top 5 offensive skill player in the NFL. And he should be used as such. And there's nothing wrong with that, especially with Penix doing his first full 17. Now, if he goes for 27 touchdowns, throws for, you know, 38 to 4,000 yards and has, you know, 10 or 11 interceptions, then you could use that and say, whoa, what is he going to do next year? And I think you are absolutely right to do that. And then next year we could be talking about, you know, 30 to 35 touchdowns. There's nothing wrong with that. But for right now, let's just remember, Falcons Nation, the plan is to run the ball, and it will be to run the ball. And Michael Penix Jr. will take his shots when he needs to, but that will be set up by Tyler Algier and Bijan Robinson doing their thing. 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. Coming back, Sigmund Bloom, one of the best fantasy experts in the world, joins me next. Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. How does he feel about all the Falcon skill position players? And we whip around the entire NFL as well. Great conversation as fantasy season is right around the corner, and we're getting you set tonight with not one but two all-pro level fantasy guests. It is Chris Thomas tonight. Turtle taking you to Corky Kell starting at 8 o'clock. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, Odyssey app. Welcome back into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is Chris Thomas tonight with you until 8 o'clock this evening. Corky Kell classic coverage comes your way. Then we want to head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our special guest, Sigmund Bloom, co-founder of FootballGuys.com. And it is fantasy season, so get out there to FootballGuys.com and check out the website for all of your fantasy needs. We're going to talk some NFL and a little fantasy football as well. Sigmund, let's start here. In Atlanta, a couple of players I'd like to highlight, starting with Bijan Robinson, the potential on the fantasy depth chart and the potential on the field. I think for him, you could say he might be viewed by some as the best option in the league.
Yeah, the number one overall pick. And I think in fantasy football, the feeling around the Falcons is maybe we can finally see how good these players can be, how good this offense can be with Michael Penix. So I do think that Bijan is a top five pick in any scenario, but he is going number one. And if you want him, you can take a stand if you draw one of those early picks, because I think that you're going to see hopefully a weight lifted from this offense now that they have a healthy, mobile, young, aggressive passer.
When it comes to the weapons that he has outside of the running back room, Drake London, we know, is an emerging star in this league. Do you think he has top five, top seven potential?
He definitely does. And we saw, now in hindsight, we can look at where, say, Jalen Polk got drafted and say that Michael Penix, because he was such a willing, able downfield passer, maybe made his draft stock, because he might not even make it to his second year with the Patriots, despite being a second round pick. So absolutely, we can look at London as someone that can fuel Drake, get his value fueled, just be a target who is open even when he's not open. And a true number one receiver who has a quarterback that can unlock what that can look like in fantasy football.
So when it comes to maybe the ultimate boom or bust player in the entire NFL resides in Atlanta, that of course is tight end Kyle Pitts. Do you think he has the potential with Penix at quarterback to finally showcase what he did again in his rookie year?
It's unlikely. I don't want to say impossible, but at the price in fantasy football leagues, I think that he's someone that we're fascinated by because he was a third round pick as a rookie out of expectations, and he was a 1,000-yard player. He was pretty impressive for a rookie. So he was a third round pick again in fantasy leagues. Then he fell to the sixth round because now we're starting to see a pattern. Then he falls to the ninth round. Now we're really seeing a pattern. And at this point, we're seeing him in the 13th, 14th, 15th round, and I'm never going to criticize anybody for taking a chance. And honestly, if Kyle Pitts goes out there week one against Tampa and doesn't do anything, then it's actually a good thing that we would just move on and pick up one of the players who did break out in week one. Michael Penix is saying the right things. It sounds like there's a relationship there between the two of them. And again, Penix made some pretty mediocre players look good at Washington.
Going around the league here now, are you a believer that Aaron Rodgers can replicate his old self in Pittsburgh?
I'm a neurotic Steelers fan, Western Pennsylvania born and bred. So I'm sick about it. Honestly, it doesn't feel like the Steelers way to be so desperate and try to make something happen that didn't work for the Jets last year. And I don't expect that you're going to see him have a renaissance, not in a Steelers offense that has been very backwards looking in terms of its concepts and the way they try to win games. They have two rookie, well, not a rookie because Troy Fautanu, he missed all last year, and Broderick Jones just kind of plays like a rookie. But the point being that they have two inexperienced tackles. Caleb Johnson's not looking like he's going to revitalize the running game, third round pick, at least not yet. So I think this is going to be a morose offense, and Aaron Rodgers is not the guy to spruce it up right now.
Talking about an offense that could go one way or another, does Justin Jefferson's stock take a hit to you because of J.J. McCarthy?
Sort of, in an indirect way. Because I think that with J.J. McCarthy, much like Michigan did, they're going to want to run the ball and really set him up in good down and distance situations and create some structure and support around him through the running game. So that's why they signed Jordan Mason, who I think is going to lead them in carries and rushing touchdowns. That's why they signed Ryan Kelly and Wolf Fries from Indianapolis to establish the run again and really provide more balance to this offense, lowering the targets across the board. Now, Justin Jefferson also has this hamstring issue. You know, we'll see about it next week. I don't love that. He has missed, I think, 7 games with a hamstring issue in recent years. So I would say at the very least, you're taking CeeDee Lamb ahead of him. You're taking the three running backs, Robinson, Jahmyr Gibbs, and Saquon Barkley ahead of him. And even if you take someone like Malik Nabers or Christian McCaffrey ahead of him, I just think, you know, while Jefferson's a magnificent player, things are not set up for him to have a career year.
Are you interested in a bounce back year from CJ Stroud? Are you staying away?
I'm staying away because we're looking at a Texans team that is still shuffling offensive line combinations, like as we speak. They play the Rams week one. And I think you're looking at an offense that's going to get off to a slow start. Joe Mixon may or may not be able to play week one. So you don't have a credible running game now to help CJ Stroud. So I just think this is one of those situations where they hope to get this going after the offensive line and offense kind of failed on them last year, but it's not going to happen right away.
Any concern in Buffalo about the lack of explosive weapons for Josh Allen?
Not really, because they seemed to do okay last year without anyone that really took the top off of the defense. That being said, you start to see Josh Palmer's banged up, Khalil Shakir's banged up, Curtis Samuel, who did come on at the end of the year last year and probably has the best straight line speed in this group, he's banged up. Keon Coleman is still inconsistent. According to camp reports, Dalton Kincaid is not really popping like a first-round pick. So, yeah, I mean, I think that you're asking Josh Allen to put a lot of this offense on his shoulders, which he has done in the past. Now, all that being said, the fantasy bottom line is I'm taking Lamar Jackson ahead of him, or I'm waiting and taking Jalen Hurts after him. I think the Eagles are going to pass a lot more this year just because it's just the way the averages go. Things aren't going to go as easy for them. But Josh Allen is still, you know, one of the best quarterbacks and best fantasy quarterbacks in the league.
Talking all things NFL and fantasy football with our good buddy Sigmund Blue. Make sure you check out footballguys.com for all of your fantasy needs. Where does Mahomes stack up this year for you? Last year, not a statistical great year for him, but he is still Patrick Mahomes. Do you buy a bounce back season for him with the numbers?
Right. I mean, you want to believe it, but we wanted to believe it last year and it didn't happen. Now we can point to the injuries. Roshi Rice, now they've announced his disciplinary hearing is September 30th. I think you're going to see a 4 to 6 game suspension. Marquise Brown's already banged up. Xavier Worthy can take a step forward in year two. Travis Kelce is slimmed down. Jalen Royals is an interesting name to bring up here, the fourth round rookie, who it sounds like Andy Reid is ready to trust as a rookie. So that tells you how quickly he is taken to things. But at a certain point, you get burned enough that you say, I'll let somebody else be the one who benefits if this Chiefs offense now gets back to its downfield passing ways. Baker Mayfield's going after Patrick Mahomes in fantasy drafts, and Baker Mayfield outscored him last year. And that was with Chris Godwin and Mike Evans banged up. So I'm probably not taking Mahomes in any of my drafts. I won't be surprised, though, if we see a return to form if these receivers stay healthy.
So funny you mentioned Baker Mayfield. That's exactly where I was going next. The numbers last year jumped off the charts. Do you think that's repeatable?
Absolutely it is. And we're not going to see Chris Godwin probably until October, but they drafted Emeka Egbuka, who from all outward indications is going to be ready right away to play a big role, the Godwin role in this offense. I'm a little worried about Tristan Wirfs, the left tackle, being out and how long he'll be out. I do think that might limit downfield passing, but this offense is a well-oiled machine at this point. They bought into Baker. He's bought into his teammates. Jalen McMillan is an ascending player as a second-year number three receiver. So eventually they will get Godwin back, and they will present a lot of problems. Remember, they also have a running game with Bucky Irving that has really come on. So I just think this is still one of the toughest offenses to defend, and the numbers are going to show it.
Speaking of running backs that can carry you, Kyren Williams, I know for me last year almost single-handedly won me a couple of chips. Do you believe the Stafford injury could hamper the running attack and the passing attack in L.A.?
It has to, right? I mean, there's just no way this offense would be as good with Jimmy Garoppolo as it would with Matthew Stafford. And they can tell us everything's okay, but when three different times you say he's going to practice and he doesn't, everything's not okay. They may have him ready to play week one, but how will he look when he starts to take hits? How will he look? Look, we just have to be rational about this and say you do not want your quarterback going into the season not able to practice because of a back issue that is a disc issue. Okay, it's not a pulled muscle in his back or something like that. You can remember the Peyton Manning saga where right up until the season, it was uncertain. And then all of a sudden he was having spinal fusion surgery and like the history of the NFL changed. He was released, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not saying that's going to happen with Matthew Stafford, but we've already seen where the teams will play this close to the vest until the actual moment of truth. Now, that being said, Puka Nacua is starting to fall to the second round of fantasy drafts. Devontae Adams is falling to the late third, early fourth round. Kyren Williams is falling to the late third. Jimmy Garoppolo is still a very good quarterback for a backup quarterback. And Sean McVay is one of the best minds in the league. They are another team with a left tackle question. Eric Jackson with the blood clots that may or may not keep him off the field this year. So that's another thing to consider here. But if fantasy drafters start to let these Rams options fall too far because of the pessimism about Stafford, that's time to pounce because we do have some faith in McVay and Garoppolo to make it a viable offense.
Speaking of injuries, are you taking either Tua, Tyreek, or Waddle, or is that team just too hot to trot right now in terms of wait and see?
I don't want Tyreek Hill on my team. I mean, sometimes fantasy football just comes back to like, it's your team. You can pick the players you want, right? I don't want Tyreek Hill on my team. I mean, I just think he's too much of a malcontent. We saw his top miles per hour speeds drop off last year. He's a player that relies on speed. He still is just not somebody who seems happy to be there. And I don't think you're going to see anything approaching a true bounce back year from him. You might see Jalen Waddle because of that. And look, there was a report from Jeremy Fowler from ESPN this weekend that teams were asking about Hill earlier in the summer. Dolphins said no, they're not trading him, but they're still watching him. Maybe it's wishful thinking, he said, but they're still watching him thinking that he's a player that could be available before the trade deadline. And that could make Jalen Waddle a really interesting player because they traded Jonnu Smith to the Steelers. And that opens up these, what I call struggle targets. You know, the offensive line is under construction and Tua Tagovailoa is going to have to throw quickly a lot. And it's not going to be to Jonnu Smith. It'll be to Devon Achane and to Jalen Waddle. So I'm okay on Waddle. But overall, you know, we saw a joint practice. And a lot of people believe the joint practices are where you really learn about a team, not the camp practices. And we just saw the Lions and Dolphins have a joint practice where the beat writers that were there said, I believe things like either the Lions are a juggernaut or the Dolphins are going to be really bad. Or that was the most lopsided joint practice I've ever seen. So I think the Dolphins could be a team that we see blown up at some point this year and totally rebuilt from scratch in the next year.
Before I let you go, are you a believer in Brock Purdy?
Sure. I mean, for fantasy and for keeping this offense and these tools very much in the scoring column and racking up the stats, I think he deserves a lot of credit because he started playing a little more loose last year, making things happen. And I think if we did see a healthy Brandon Ayuk and Juwan Jennings, we had everybody all hands on deck in this pass offense, he's going to show that he's worth the money. And you know, maybe the reason that the 49ers aren't living up to expectations, I would not put it at his feet. He's still one of the reasons that we think they have a chance to contend.
Sigmund, appreciate the time as always. We'll be checking out footballguys.com and we'll chat soon.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thanks.
That was our good buddy there, Sigmund Bloom, footballguys.com, one of the great fantasy websites out there. We'll continue our fantasy football preview about an hour from now with Chad Parsons, another great fantasy expert. We'll see if he agrees with what Sigmund said. Bijan Robinson, number one overall? Okay. Drake London, top 5, 6, 7 receiver? Okay. Dare you take a flyer on Kyle Pitts? Sigmund says, nah, probably not. We'll see what Chad Parsons has to say about an hour from now. But when we get back, Joe Patrick will preview all things Falcons and Titans coming up tomorrow. And as you know, I have the Falcons flyover after the postgame show. Our chance to chat about the games right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, I wish I could promise that Mike Conti, our boss, that, you know, my podcast downloads are going to be the 11 million that this episode of New Heights has gotten so far on YouTube. Unbelievable. If you missed it, Taylor Swift went on the New Heights podcast with the Kelce Boys, launched a new album, and talked about their relationship really openly and extensively. And within 12 hours, they had over 11 million views on YouTube. It's unbelievable. It's crazy. Again, I wish I could promise Mike Conti we were going to get those types of numbers, but I know my numbers are going to be boosted because my next guest is on, Joe Patrick, with me on the WadeFord.com hotline. And check out his podcast, too. Maybe combine, Joe, we can get to that 11 million number for our downloads compared to Joe Patrick on football and Chris Thomas tonight. Does that equal new heights? I don't know, but we'll find out. Joe, we got to talk Falcons and Titans. Obviously, we know what happened yesterday at the joint practice with the skirmish. Michael Penix involved. He sounded mature and focused after practice. What did you see out there? How high was that intensity? And do you feel like that was a good, nice look at Michael Penix Jr. leading the way over those 2 days?
I think so. I mean, it's not just the joint practices in terms of evaluating Michael Penix. It's the entirety of the training camp and what we've seen, and just his willingness to push the ball downfield, and then also the effectiveness in doing so. I think it's worth noting, Chris, that for all this talk, you know, I'm sure Falcons fans were tuning in. You know, they've heard this kind of theme consistently over the course of the training camp, that he's obviously pushing the ball deep, and that kind of fits the MO that he had throughout his college career. But I think that what would be surprising to people is the fact that I've only seen him throw one interception this entire training camp in 11-on-11. There have been, I know, like, there was one that he had against the Titans in 7-on-7s that was kind of very similar to that one that Kyle Pitts kind of tipped up in the air in that Giants game, where it was there was a throw slightly behind Charlie Warner, and that he kind of Warner kind of batted the ball up in the air for a Titans player to take away in the end zone. But other than the one that that Michael Penix threw that was intercepted in a red zone drill, I believe it was sometime early last week in that rainy day, I can't recall him throwing another interception. So I think that that's really important context to put in what we've been talking about with him pushing the ball downfield. And then just on that note, to kind of go back to the whole fiasco that ensued on Wednesday. So what started it all was he threw this touchdown pass to Ray McCloud. And to give you some perspective from my vantage point, Chris, I was standing right in front of Ray, like when he was crossing the goal line. And, you know, it was a big play. So I immediately put my head down to take notes on what happened on the play, and to, you know, potentially send out a tweet. And I look up and I just see a massive humanity. I was kind of triggered to look up because I could hear like people start yelling. And I saw Jesse Bates on the field, and he was supposed to be on the other field for context there, but he had got everybody that was on the sideline of the other field that was working kind of spilled onto the field. And even people such as Terry Fontenot, for example, was trying to break things up. And it's not often you hear about one of these fights that happen in a training camp, especially in a joint practice, where the quarterback is basically at the bottom of a dog pile. That's basically what it sounds like to us. I don't know if anybody got that clear of a view of exactly what was happening with Penix during the whole melee, but man, it's a scary situation from an injury perspective. But I think also when you kind of take a step back and you realize, okay, nobody was hurt, everybody was okay. You know, with the way that we saw the Falcons teammates respond to Penix, the way that they appreciated what he had to say about the whole situation afterwards, with Matthew Bergeron and Ray McCloud, for example, kind of retweeting some of the quotes that were out there on Twitter and kind of saying, like, that's my quarterback, that kind of thing. I think we can just kind of take away that it was a constructive exercise from a team bonding standpoint, and kind of having one of those fiery moments that brings the team together. And hopefully that can, you know, build some permanence as we go into the season here.
Here's the thing. Based off of everything you just said, I just think it's worth noting, and I said this to start the show today, we are all on the Michael Penix Jr. hype train, Joe, myself included, leading the charge. Cannot wait. The bread and butter for the Atlanta Falcons, though, Joe, is to run the ball. They will be set up to throw by Bijan Robinson and Tyler Allgeier, doing what they need to do on first and second down. So I think, you know, just to, you know, put things into a realistic perspective, could Michael Penix Jr. throw 40 touchdowns this year? Sure. But, Joe, do I think that's the game plan for the Falcons? No, I do not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree because, you know, ultimately, I don't think that Penix is going to be one of those guys who has super high volume passing stats in terms of just like having a bunch of attempts per game, in part because, you know, you don't expect this team to really be trailing games where they're in those kinds of shootouts where they do have to kind of rear back and pass it a bunch of times in a row. And that was kind of echoed by Jeff Ulbrich and Raheem Morris earlier in the offseason, even when those guys are first hired, kind of talking about like, we're building this team as a team that is built to have leads. And that's why they wanted to go out and attract or acquire those pass rushers that they got in the draft, is because they think the teams are going to be passing against them and they can get after them. And then as it pertains to the running backs, you're totally right. And you know, it's these guys, Bijan and Tyler Algier, have completely gone under the radar in this training camp because, you know, there's so much intrigue around Michael Penix and not knowing exactly who he is as a quarterback and what he means for this team and for these pass catchers overall. But you're totally right. I mean, Bijan Robinson, by some metrics, if you look at some of the underlying stuff that you know, the sickos, the analyst sickos like to use, you can argue that Bijan Robinson had one of the best years in terms of running efficiency in NFL history. Now, he did not have the big time runs that limited some of his total numbers, but it's kind of crazy that he did have the numbers that he had, still having had a career long rush of only 38 yards. And when you go back and watch some of the film, Chris, which I've done, I know you've done too, it's amazing to see just the sheer amount of carries that probably should be 0 yard gains, maybe even losses of yards, that he turns into 5 yard pickups, 7 yard pickups, 8 yard pickups. Like, and that's the kind of thing that can just keep the chains moving, keep drives alive, keep the pressure off of a young quarterback like Michael Penix. So I think, you know, these things kind of work hand in hand. And to that point, you know, Zach Robinson has to make sure they work hand in hand by utilizing some play action game in the passing game, which I think he'll be much more willing to do. And I think he's shown so far in training camp, having a quarterback that's able to escape some pressures and he's willing to have his back turn, as he was not clearly with Kirk Cousins coming off that injury last year. So all these things work hand in hand, but I certainly expect those running backs to have a big year. And if I could just add one more point to this, Chris, I was talking to the running backs coach, Michael Petrie, earlier this week. And I don't know if you remember, but this time last year, the conversation around Bijan was like, all right, let's get back to basics a little bit. Let's do more. He talked about kind of wanting to have more of a Christian McCaffrey style of role in the team, where he's just kind of focused on being a runner and utilizing that to the best extent possible to help the team. And I do think that they are now thinking of different ways that they can use Bijan in terms of how they get him utilized in formations and motions and things like that, and how they can get both of these backs on the field at the same time. And if they're able to use Bijan in some different roles where they can get him in motion going out, getting him split out a little bit, and they can still have Tyler Algier in the backfield as a threat to be a ball carrier there, where he himself can also create explosives. In fact, he's been like more of an explosive runner in terms of just the rate in which he creates those explosive runs. I'm talking about like 20 plus yard runs than even Bijan. So, it's really a great tandem that the Falcons have in that backfield, along with an offensive line that can block exactly how they want it. So that's why, I mean, the potential for this offense is as sky high as it is.
What position battles and what guys are you looking out for to stick out on Friday?
Yeah, on Friday, I think it's just more of the same of what we saw in that Lions game. And unfortunately, that game was cut short and for good reason. But, you know, I think that what we didn't get to see there was some players enter the game. We don't know if Braylon Trice, for example, was ever going to enter that game. He did dress and sounded ready to play. I know that he was sounding like before that game that he was going to play. They ultimately held him out, which was surprising because I've seen him rep with, you know, the ones. And it's hard to say like what exactly the ones are, because they do such a heavy rotation on that defensive line, that defensive front. Nate Ollie's been talking about, like, we don't want these guys in for more than four plays in a row because we want to just be throwing bodies at them. And the Tennessee Titans offensive line, and we're talking about how annoying that is when you're just like, you want to kind of get a feel for a guy. And you just like, when they're just continuously throwing different players in there, it gets really frustrating, not only because they have different attributes, but obviously they're, you know, just more energized and ready to go when they've had a rest. And so, it's going to be, I think, like a big edge room in terms of just the amount of players that they probably keep at that position, Braylon Trice being one of them. But I'm interested to see how that goes. Morgan Fox is another one of those guys that we didn't really get to see a lot of. And that's interesting because I thought he was going to be a pretty significant piece of this team's kind of third down pass rush plan as kind of a Grady Jarrett light, so to speak, not in terms of what he is overall to the defense, but just in terms of the way that he attacks offensive linemen in those pass rushing situations as being a bit of a gap shooter and somebody who has a track record. So it was interesting that he only came into that game very late on, only got, I think, a couple reps before the game ended up being cut short. So that was an interesting one. And then the other thing, Chris, is that it's gone a little bit under the radar because Younghoe Koo's kind of, I think, locked down the fact that he's going to be the team starting kicker in his training camp kick so far, but he is going to be taking the kicks in this game. And you never know if the dynamic could change if he misses a couple. So I think it will be really important for Falcons fans and the coaching staff to see him go out there and nail whatever kicks they give him.
All right. So a couple more things here before I cut you loose. Crystal ball prediction. Does Kirk play in either of these last two games?
No, I don't think he will. That question hasn't left open, so I could technically be wrong, but I do feel pretty strong, confident in this that he's not going to play. Raheem Morris kind of said, like, you know, we'll leave it up to him. We'll have a conversation about it. And he said that last year he wanted to get some reps in preseason, and I think it's a different dynamic this year for him because he's not the starting quarterback. So, you know, like there's not the pressure on him to go into that week one game and be ready to perform. So I don't think that he feels the same necessity to get in there. And I got to say, Chris, it's like, listen, I take the point in good faith that you know, you want to show that he's healthy. The Falcons might have an interest in showing that he's healthy, but I don't know what him getting back there and throwing a few footballs for a series or two is really going to show teams that they didn't already know about Kirk Cousins. I just don't know what exactly he can prove other than for him to go out there and like run some play action. But I don't think that they would do that in this instance with the backup offensive line for him, which we saw was pretty shaky in that Lions game. So I don't think he's going to play for that reason being that offensive line.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I just think owners, GMs, coaches, as we know in the NFL, are obsessive compulsive, to say the least. And maybe just the sheer fact of literally watching him just throw a few plays, maybe, I don't know how, you know, it's an interesting thing. I don't know. Maybe you know the answer to this. I don't know how much film of other teams, like, do they get? Like, how much have other coaches, GMs, owners have been able to see of Kirk in Flowery Branch the last couple of weeks? I don't know the answer to that.
It's a great point. I believe the Falcons can basically control their film, and I do wonder if they would be willing to share some of the film they have of Kirk Cousins if a team came in and was interested in that. So, but it's a great question.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, and I'll be fascinated to see what happens. All right, Joe, appreciate it. As always, we'll check in after the game on Monday to recap everything that went down.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Chris. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Joe Patrick there. Make sure you check out Joe Patrick on football. When we get back, we'll let you hear from Caden Ellis and Chris Blair on stuff that went down yesterday. Then we'll also let you hear from Charlie Warner as he joined the morning shift. So the Falcons talk continues as we hit the 7 o'clock hour. It is Chris Thomas tonight with you till 8 o'clock, leading into Corky Kell Classic coverage.